Hello, welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast. This is Paul Solentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. I have Bob Lutz and Mike Kennedy with me today. We're going to do kind of our all-decade team. We're going to go through each of our picks for the top five moments, happening, developments, games of the past decade. I'm leaning on two guys who have seen all or most of these events. Mike Kennedy, of course, the voice of the Shocker. Bob Lutz, radio host, Mr. League 42, Mr. 150 for 150. We did rock, paper, scissors to decide who gets to unveil their list first. Bob,
well, one. Can we go back and forth, Paul?
I think, well, we could do that. Do you want to go with ones and twos and threes? Is that better?
Whatever Mike thinks.
Well, now you suggested something and then you back off your
suggestion. No, I mean, I didn't really rank them, but I've got five that I think are clear cut. Now, I appreciate diversity of opinion. Hopefully Mike's going to take us in a direction or two that I didn't think of.
And I talked to Paul about this before we started this. To me, there's one clear-cut number one. After that, ranking him in any kind of order is kind of difficult.
So. Yeah. I came up with a fairly clear-cut five. Okay. And after that, I'm curious to know what you all think.
Okay. Well, go. Fire away.
Well, number one is undoubtedly, in my opinion, getting to a Final Four. And only the second time that's ever happened. Now, along that path, there were all kinds of moments that happened that you could include in this list. Beating Gonzaga, winning in L.A., and cutting the nets down out there. All kinds of things happened en route to that, but that has to be number one, right?
I agree. And to me, you get into those things, individual games, when you're talking about a 10-year period, I think the general accomplishment's probably about as deep as you can go. We're going to exclude a lot of stuff, but I agree. In fact, I was even thinking, even at a Duke or a Michigan State or one of those places, a Final Four is going to be in your top five over any 10-year period. If they happen to be more than one, great, but I think that's a huge accomplishment at any program.
Why does the Gonzaga game seem to resonate so much? I think even more in my mind and in other people's minds, more than the Ohio State game. What was it about that moment in Salt Lake?
Much more, in my opinion. Now, the stakes were higher against Ohio State, but you beat a number one seed, a team that at that point was, I think, number one ranked in the country. And no one really expected Wichita State to be anywhere close to that level at that point in time. So winning that game in the dramatic fashion that they did and playing as well as they did, it was monumental, I thought.
I agree, for all the reasons you said. I think that I don't think any of us knew exactly what to expect going into that first game with Pittsburgh. And that game was a reasonably easy win, more so than we might have expected. So then you look at Gonzaga and think, well, maybe it's possible. But I still don't think many people would have predicted a win, and I think that it just, yeah, I mean, that was like, wow, this is for real. And I'll never forget the celebration on the court right after that game. Was to me the most spontaneous, joyful moment of the entire run to the Final Four.
Yeah, I think so much came out of that. You know, I think we had a sense how good Ron and Fred could be, but that was really a part of coming out party for those two. The celebration, it was right in front of you and right in front of us too. That was really nice. And, you know, I think, too, you remember that team was not particularly hot going into the NCAA tournament. They had struggled, kind of fumbled away the Valley title down the stretch, and then, you know, then this happened. It was quite the story.
And covering the NCAA tournament as many times as I did, Salt Lake City was, in my opinion, the best venue simply because of the seating we had. We were right on top of everything. And it was just a moment etched in our memories, for sure.
So it sounds like we all agree. Final Four stands number one for what it represented. It was kind of the achievement that couldn't be knocked down, and it will stand for, you know, 50 years as a highlight for Shocker fans. And kind of set the table for so much of other things that we're probably going to talk about today. All right, Bob, where do you go after the Final Four?
It's not Mike's turn. Mike, let Mike have this turn.
I'm not sure. Again, with an order after the Final Four. So I would say, just to stay with the basketball theme, and I don't know that I absolutely would rank both of these in the top five, but somewhere in there, to come back and go 34-0 the next year before losing an epic game to Kentucky just kind of validated everything that the Final Four represented. And then to go another year forward to reach another Sweet 16 2 years later by beating Indiana and Kansas back-to-back, two of the storied name programs, especially for what beating KU meant to Shocker fans. I think those two things certainly have to be considered in the top five.
Yeah, hard to argue with either of those. I think that 34-0 start, that team belongs in the discussion. I think the two best Shocker teams ever might be that team and the 63-64 team that just missed going to a Final Four. They won't get the credit that the two Final Four teams got. It's interesting because the year after the 63-64 team had the near miss, that team went to the Final Four without Dave Stallworth and Nate Bowman.
Yeah.
And this time, the team that had gone to the Final Four the next year, I think, had an even better team, but didn't get to the Final Four. So I would agree, Mike. That's a pretty good one.
Yeah, what a great two-year period, a three-year period, if you want to extend it into the Sweet 16. And I think we've talked about it before, that the 13-14, the unbeaten regular season team, not getting to play more of those high-level games like it did against Kentucky in the NCAA is one of the big shames, or one of the big regrets, that you didn't get to see that team tested more on that kind of stage. That would have been really, really fun.
I would throw in at number two for me the joining of the American Athletic Conference, leaving the Missouri Valley. We kind of thought about it for many, many years, and for it to finally happen was monumental and one of the biggest stories of not only the decade, but of Wichita State's athletic lifetime. And getting to the American, I think everybody's still kind of adjusting 3 years in. What is it? What is this? How's it going to work? But so far it's worked very well, and all you have to do is look at men's basketball and the number of teams that get into the NCAA tournament from this conference opposed to the Valley, and how stale the Valley had become. How coming to home games and even watching road games, they were a fait accompli. There was just the competition level had dwindled to the point that Wichita State had to do something, and they did a big thing.
Yes, if you held my feet to the fire and say, okay, you absolutely have to rank something second, that's where I would have put that also. To me, it's still kind of a, I don't know, you'd say bittersweet, a little bit, that kind of moment. I think we all grew up with the Valley and what it once was, and to me it's sad that, circumstances even beyond athletics led to, a lot of those schools just not being able to do much about their situation. But without question, it was something Wichita State needed to do if it was going to move forward. And I remember asking Darren Boatwright at the time if this was the best conference Wichita State could have gone into without football, and he said, I believe even with football it was the best opportunity we could have asked for.
And there's some unsurety about this because we've seen UConn, they're already on the way out. We know that other schools in this conference would like to get into a Power Five for their football program. So still that kind of not feeling exactly sure that this conference is going to hold together for the long term, but for the short term, it's been a great deal.
72 years in the Valley, but I think Bob expressed it well. I think people, especially in men's basketball, were ready for bigger things, ready to be associated with schools such as Tulsa, Memphis, Cincinnati. And I think it was certainly an earth-shaking, monumental move for the athletic department and the university.
And to what Bob just addressed, certainly, Cincinnati's made it known. It's looked to try to get to the Big 12 if they were going to expand and so forth. That could still happen, but I don't see a mass exodus. I don't think the opportunities are going to be there for a lot of these schools to move. And so I think there will be enough stability, and the league is looking at trying to enhance men's basketball, and certainly in baseball, it's a tremendous baseball conference. I mean, a lot of the sports that are important to Wichita State, it's a really good league in those as well.
Definitely. I don't have the mania for conference expansion seems to have lessened than it was 5 years ago. I would say it's always a possibility, but I don't have near the red alert that I may have in previous
continue
years.
To hear that something's coming in 2022 or 2023, that some of the TV deals are running out, and that there's still a little bit of a tremor below the surface that we might have more, but hey, who knows what's going to happen, so enjoy the moment, right?
I think the only disappointment maybe in the American has been volleyball, which I don't know if it's, although Cincinnati made it to the Sweet 16, so that's definitely a step forward, but I was anticipating or hoping for maybe a little more depth and a little more power out of the volleyball teams in the American.
The first year Wichita State was in 2018? Yeah, 2018. I thought it was not as good top to bottom as the Missouri Valley had been when Wichita State left, but I think this past year the league was definitely better overall, and I think it's going to be a good volleyball conference for the most part. Again, I think that Wichita State being in there has helped kind of push some of the other programs to step it up a little bit. The addition of a conference tournament was due in part to some lobbying by Chris Lamb that this is something that would be good for this conference. And so I think that's a sport that will continue to grow a little bit.
Well, I had the Final Four number one. I had kind of an overarching Wichita State baseball number two on my list, and I really went back and forth between that and the conference, but I think as a recognition of the importance of Shocker baseball in the past and then what Wichita State hopes baseball can be again, I went with the whole arc of, you know, firing Gene Stephenson, replacing him, and then replacing him with Eric Wedge, which certainly appears to be just a dream move, a great move. So I went with Wichita State baseball. That all the developments of this decade is number two on my list.
I went with Gene, who stands on his own at number three, a legend. One of the finest baseball coaches in the history of college baseball, a guy who built this program from the ground up. That it would come to that sort of end is something that I don't think anybody could have foreseen. But there were signs that the program was slipping and deteriorating, and obviously they didn't bring in the right guy to take them back to the promised land, but. The way that Gene Stephenson's career ended at Wichita State was certainly one of the top Shocker stories of the decade.
You know, when you approached me about this discussion, my initial list was all essentially positive things that have happened in that 10-year period, but you can't ignore the significance of what Bob just talked about. To me, what Gene Stephenson did with baseball here and what Bill Snyder did with football at Kansas State are two of the most significant building stories in the history of college athletics. And so for that tenure, for that whole thing to come to an end, certainly is significant. And I believe that if we were having this discussion a couple of years from now, hiring Eric Wedge would be somewhere in the top of our list. But of course, he still has to actually get out on the field and prove that.
Yeah, and the Gene part of the story, definitely both for his Wichita State accomplishments and just as a college baseball pioneer figure. And then it's improved. He's now back. He's more part of the program. He's been around. He's in the Shocker Hall of Fame. So I think all those things have been part of the baseball story as well.
Let me just say, even though Todd Butler's tenure failed to produce what everyone hoped it would in terms of accomplishments and, as Bob said, getting back to that level where the program had been, I do think, just with some of the people they were able to recruit, there is an encouraging note there that it is, and assistant coaches have told me, it's still a name. You can go out and present Wichita State baseball to potential recruits, and they still know who it is. They know about the history, and so it was good to find out, at least, some of the people they recruited, that's still there.
I had the American Athletic Conference then number three, although I would have been open to flip-flopping those two, certainly. Bob, where do we go next?
Well, we talked about baseball. I'd have to say that we had a little bit of a return to the one-name Shocker stars. Ron and Fred don't need any further identification. I think Landry is right in that area as well. Some people who went from this program to the NBA and made a splash, and you'll certainly see that now with Fred VanVleet and to a lesser degree, Landry Shamet, although he's been hurt a lot this year. But Fred VanVleet has established himself as a near, if not an all-star, a guy that is going to get some consideration as an NBA all-star. And to me, Fred VanVleet might have his own category, too, in this list of stories of the decade. Because look where he came from. Yes, he was a top 150 recruit or top 100 recruit or whatever, but people had sold him short during his entire life, and to some degree here. Nice college player, but you know that'll be the end of the road for Fred. And our friend Doug Gottlieb certainly was at the forefront of that. But
I was hoping we could get through a podcast without mentioning Doug Gottlieb's name.
Well, I still got to get Connor Frankamp in here. Yeah. But Fred is just an unbelievable story. I think there'll be a movie. I mean, I just think what he's accomplished, given all the obstacles that he's had to overcome, you know, believe in yourself. He's made it a mantra, and it completely validated that.
And you mentioned it's been more than a couple. Just the fact that there had been 30 years between Xavier McDaniel and Tre Murray getting to the NBA. So to have a run, several NBA players out of this program again for the first time in three decades is kind of a story in itself also.
Yeah, I would have grouped those separately kind of in my honorable mention category. I would put Ron and Fred together as kind of a unit, great stories, great ambassadors for the program, all that. And then, as you mentioned, the NBA shockers, the return of, you know, Wichita State to some NBA rosters. That I think both of those have been...
And see, while I have very high opinion of Ron Baker, one of the great players in the history of the program, as well as Landry Shamet, I just think Fred has separated himself to some degree. I think Fred Van Vliet has now kind of become that shocker icon that we've reserved for people like Stallworth and McDaniel and Carr and those people.
And I think would be unique in the history of many programs. I mean, he's just such a unique individual and player. I mean, Chris Jans said one time that he told an NBA scout, yeah, I know he's too small and he's not quick enough, but he said, I've never seen anybody like him in my entire experience. He's like a 35-year-old assistant coach on the floor. He just sees things that nobody else sees. And that's what's making him an NBA star when everything says that shouldn't be possible.
I asked some Shocker fans for some Twitter submissions. Let's get their ideas in here. Steven Turner, College Game Day coming to Wichita. That would have been, 2015 against Northern Iowa?
I believe so,
was that the
yeah.
season? That
yeah,
was a big
was,
day.
Yeah.
Gave the Shockers some national recognition. Drew Bridges pitches in with having Greg Marshall, Chris Jans, and Greg Heyer on the same staff. The assistant coaching tree, Greg Marshall, is certainly a big,
Steve Forbes,
big part of this.
Yeah, and Earl Grant.
Yeah.
Scott Shoemaker, we all know Scott. He came in with a lot of ideas, leaving the MVC, Gene Stevenson, Eric Wedge, beating KU, evolution from reaching the dance every other decade to disappointment when you miss 1 year, it's a disappointment. Track and field, volleyball, Scott had a well-rounded submission there.
When you're talking about a unique individual like Fred Van Vliet, I have one on my list that I might be the only one, because I got to know her very well. But Alefine Tuliamuk was a 13-time All-American in track and field and cross country. No individual athlete in the history of the program has done anything greater. Now, and I'll acknowledge that, you know, there's more opportunities because you have indoor and outdoor track, you have cross country, but still, and she did it in distance running, where it's not like a sprinter where you can run three or four events in one track meet. So that was a pretty incredible accomplishment. She's gone on. She's having a great pro career. She's a very possible Olympian for the United States. So to me, that accomplishment is pretty significant over this last 10-year period.
And that leads us perfectly into my number four, which was overarching women's athletics and what they accomplished during the decade. You go through each of the programs, from basketball, three NCAA tournaments, volleyball in the Sweet 16, unbeaten American season, hosted NCAA play here, softball, two NCAAs, got to the final of the regional in 2018, track and field, you talked about Alefine and all the conference titles they won, including now in the American. Women's golf with the Valley titles. Taryn Torgerson won the individual American title. Women's tennis dominated the Valley, went to NCAA play. Some of those programs had previous success. Some of them had not really. I think Jim Schaus, people around here, would give credit for really elevating women's athletics. And then In the 2010s, boy, every program really took its turn and has really become prominent.
And within that, one of the things you mentioned I had on my list as a five or six was getting to host NCAA volleyball first and second rounds in 2017, and not only getting to, but had the second largest crowds of any of the sites in the nation behind Nebraska.
Yeah, that became a must-see event. The crowd was great, the excitement level was high, and it just shows you what's possible. And women's sports have gained so much popularity, and volleyball here has been outstanding, and you hope for the same in women's basketball. And but Mike's right, those accomplishments in track and field. And, you know, we tend to put that on the back burner a little bit because I just don't have enough time to pay attention to every single thing. But what Steve Rainbolt has done and continues to do here in track and field, I love track and field. I wish it got more attention, but it's been fantastic to see all the athletes that he's producing.
And, you know, I just thought of this. I hadn't had this on a list anywhere, but you mentioned it in kind of in passing. If you're looking at an overreaching development, the coach hirings of Jim Schaus while he was here, and you look at how, you know, Rainbolt and Chris Lamb and Colin Foster and tennis. I mean, you look at how many of those are still here and still having a great deal of success. Retained Greer Jones, who of course just retired, but had a tremendous run of success. So I mean, that the overall and winning out of that, all of those Missouri Valley all sports trophies and so forth, just dominating all sports in a way that Wichita State never had before.
Yeah, someone in the department when I was running this topic by them mentioned the all sports trophies in the Valley, and that directly goes to track and field, which played such a, you know, you can really rack up a lot of points in track and field and cross country, which Wichita State did for many years. Bob, well, where do we go next?
Well, one other thing I'd like to mention, I don't know if it's top five development, but I think it's worthy of mentioning. There's been no one in the history of Wichita State athletics who meant more to this program and to the city of Wichita than Dave Stallworth. So getting the statue erected and his passing were huge moments, sad, uplifting with the statue that's just outside of Koch Arena. But I think it's always important to remember Dave because I think he's the greatest player in Shocker history, an ambassador for not only Wichita State, but the city and the game of basketball, and I think we'd be remiss not to mention him.
I agree, and in fact, that just sparked another thought in my mind, that I think one of the things that we've seen in this last decade is a welcoming and a re-embracing a lot of the past and the history. I mean, besides the statue, Bob Powers was involved in the reunion of the 65 Final Four team that certainly Greg Marshall and Darren Boatwright and everyone embraced and had a lot to do with. Greg Marshall's gone a long way toward reaching out to former players, and even, you know, Gene Smithson has been here during that time. And Steve Rainbolt, I know, made connections with Herm Wilson and a lot of the, and it's been done in tennis. So I think that's been a great thing, that just because there have been changes in coaches and ADs and whatever, that the door is certainly open and welcoming to all of the people that helped build the history here.
No doubt. I think when you're successful, it is so much easier and more fun. You know, in 1999, I don't know that people wanted to be reminded about Antoine Carr or Dave Stallworth, because all it said was, we're not doing those things anymore. But now, in 2013, you've got connections, and it's a, you know, the success is continuing and it's been built upon. And I think that's been really good. So, yeah, hopefully, and the Stallworth, the memories, the remembrances, the statue, hopefully that's educated some of the younger folks about Dave Stallworth and what he accomplished here.
You know, Greg Marshall made a point when this Oklahoma series started 3 years ago that game has become down there sort of an extension of the old all-college tournament, and he became aware that Cleo was not allowed to stay with the team in Oklahoma City and all that. Had him come into the locker room, talk to the players about that. I mean, that's some of the guys in the history of our program, Cleo, Linwood Sexton, were trailblazers in college athletics and race relations and so forth. And I think it was great that our young players got a taste of just what that experience was like and what all of that has meant over the years.
Yeah, we see a lot of former Shockers that have come back over the last 10 years to be a part of things. And you know, the basketball staff, Greg Marshall, has certainly done a nice job of welcoming them and spending time with them and letting them come to practice, all those kind of things that are important. Where do we go next, Bob?
Well, I think we've covered a lot of it. I don't think we want to completely bury the NIT championship. I think that had a lot to do with an afterburner effect of getting Wichita State basketball. I think that really convinced a lot of people that, hey, we're onto something here. So I think that's something you got to mention. Now, we're not going to throw that in as a top five development, I don't think. Mike might, but no. I think it's worthy of mention.
I do too. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because that year there were certainly circumstances that Wichita State easily could have been in the NCAA tournament, but you know, Indiana State won the Valley tournament and then got beaten the first round by Syracuse, and that could have happened to Wichita State. That run to the NIT finals gained some notoriety. I mean, a couple of games were televised from Koch Arena, and people had a chance to see the crowd and the atmosphere, which I think had positive benefits. So in some ways, that might have done more for the program at that time than if they'd gone to the NCAA that year.
It was a lot of fun, very helpful. I think that Nebraska game will be, I don't know, if I were to rank games I was at, it would probably be in the top 15 or so, just how well they played. And you could just kind of feel people jumping on board and saying, oh, all right, well, we didn't really want to be in the NIT, but if we're here, this is going to be fun if we play like this. I would agree. The NIT was an important moment during that decade. The fifth point that I had was, and we've touched on it, coaching continuity when you go through this department and talk about people who have been here 20 years or so, Chris Lamb and Steve Rainbolt, and you've got 8 or 10 or more people like Greg Marshall, Tom McCurdy in golf, Kirk Hunter, Christy Breadbenner, Colin Foster. So I think that's a reflection on people like it here. They can have success, and I think that's been a big part of, you know, why do you have so much success in track and field? Because you've got a coaching staff that's hung together for a lot of years.
Yeah, and there's a lot of publicity that goes along with the money that was raised to keep Greg Marshall here and that sort of thing. But I think that that now it's Darren Boatwright, so I'll give him the credit on a lot of this. But an understanding that that's important to stay relevant and be good in those other sports, and to keep a Chris Lamb compared to what he could make at one of the top five programs to here is different. It's a different level of things than, say, in men's basketball or whatever. So I think that they've tried to remain competitive with the bigger programs that might lure those coaches away and keep the Steve Rainbolts and Chris Lambs and so forth. I think there's been a definite emphasis on that to, within reason, Christy Breadbenner, do what you can to keep them here and keep those programs strong.
And Mike mentioned beating KU, and I always get nervous about that because that was a huge thing back in Omaha. That was probably the game of the decade, if it's not Gonzaga. But now we're at a point, I think, where Wichita State, when it's mentioned by Bill Self that Wichita State could beat anybody anytime, I just want to say, okay, we know that. And that's not really a knock on Bill Self. I don't know the context of how he was asked a question or anything like that, but I think the days of Wichita State being compared to KU are probably over. They're both excellent basketball programs in their own right. I only wish they played annually, and maybe someday that will happen. But Wichita State's probably as likely to beat KU now any given time as KU's likely to beat Wichita State. I think they're, if not even, Wichita State's certainly on that next level. And for Wichita State to be compared to KU is, we don't need to do that anymore.
I thought one of the best things that happened out of that, I mean, obviously the Shocker fans were excited, but there wasn't a sense of rubbing it in because they'd beaten them one time. There weren't T-shirts and posters popping up all over the place. And when the topic came up about, well, what about playing them now? And Greg Marshall said, you know, whatever, I'm fine with where the series is right now. And I think the fans kind of, I think the fans have come to realize that Wichita State doesn't have to play KU or K-State to validate its program. And they're playing lots of good area opponents and a very good schedule. I still think it should I still think it should be. I think Wichita State should play KU and K-State.
I don't think it's a validation. I just think it's good for Kansas basketball.
Absolutely.
And I think it's too bad that the coaches, I think Greg Marshall, from everything I understand and having conversations with him, is not adverse to playing either program.
Absolutely.
But apparently the others are, and we'll hopefully someday it'll get figured out. But Wichita State is on a very high level nationally right now, and I think that's very pleasing, obviously, to Wichita State fans. And just the fact that the Shockers are entrenched now as almost an annual NCAA team, that's a huge development of the decade as well. Because that's never been the case.
Yeah, there had been, two or three occasions where they had gone in back-to-back years to the NCAA to go 7 years in a row and win a game in all but one of those years over that end of that stretch. Yeah, it's just totally different. And at a time when it's been harder to get there than what it used to be.
That was quite a weekend in Omaha, and I think, as Mike pointed out, quite a three-year crest for the program to really, you know, stack up those accomplishments was something important, and it's helped sustain this program. Are we missing any before we wrap it up?
Mike, do you have anything else written down?
No, because I think we've touched on, I think Paul summed it up well, the accomplishments of the women's overall program in individual sports, and so, no. I mean, I guess the most hopeful thing to me is that in a couple of years we can be talking about the resurgence of baseball to the level where we used to know it. And I happen to believe that's going to happen. I think Eric Wedge is one of the great hires all time in the history of this program.
Yeah, that would be important. That would be nice to get back to where Oklahoma State rolls into town and there's 5,000, 6,000 people out there. That would be a big accomplishment. All right, real quick before we end, both of you give me a thought or two on what you've seen from Shocker basketball to this point.
Well, I like it. I think it's a young team. I think they're still kind of feeling their way along a little bit, but I think they've got good perimeter players. They've got great depth inside. I think right now, you know, maybe leadership is the next horizon, somebody that's gonna be regarded as that type of leader. But I think Tyson Etienne is on the verge of that. He's a freshman, but he's a 20-year-old freshman who plays at a, my goodness. When I watch him play, and I put this out there the other day, I see him as being the next potential one-name guy. I think he's, you know, and to say that after, what, 9 games or 10 games is, sounds ludicrous, but there's just something about the way he carries himself that has greatness written on him. I don't know. What do you think, Mike?
Oh, I agree. And I will be very, very hesitant to compare anyone to Fred VanVleet, but he does remind me, just in general personality, the way he goes about things, his maturity for his age, that there are some similarities there, which I think can only be a positive. I think I really like what Greg Marshall has said a couple of times in interviews with me, that this is a pretty good team right now, but the ceiling is really high. How this team could be really, really good by the end of the year. You know, you look at what they've accomplished to this point. I thought the fact that they improved as much as they did from the West Virginia loss in the next couple of games and addressed some of those things shows that this is a group that's listening and coachable and is going to get better. The improvement that the guys that were freshmen last year have made to their sophomore year, the work they did in the offseason on stuff they needed to work on, is encouraging. So I'm excited about what this team could be, and good schedule coming up over the next couple or 3 weeks. It'll just help us kind of know where they are going into conference play.
Yeah, the two big jumps this team has made has followed, you know, several days of practice, a week off or many days off, and they've got a lot of that coming up, so that'll be interesting.
That would help to get Dexter Dennis going.
Yeah, that's obviously the thing. As well as they played at Oklahoma State, I mean, you can talk about Isaac Likely not being there, which is valid and legitimate, but in essence, Wichita State didn't have Dexter Dennis, who is an equally capable player of influencing a game.
Yeah, beating Oklahoma State by 19 on the road with not getting much from Dexter, and Jaime Echenique only played 10 minutes. He played well for those 10 minutes. But
I was
going to
say, those are two very important players going forward for Wichita State, Dexter Dennis and Echenique. And if they play up to the level we saw last year, my goodness, they were both very good players last year. And then you have all these other weapons. The ceiling is high for this team, I think.
Bob, let's talk about the 150 real quick. We've had a couple of former Shockers announced recently. Audacia Moore, great sprinter here at Wichita State, will be there. Antoine Carr will be there. What's the latest on the 150, or how can people get involved?
We got a lot of announcements coming up. We're making them on social media every other day, pretty much, during just a lot of great athletes. We've got Jim Ryan and Lynette Woodard confirmed as keynote speakers. We're working on Barry Sanders every day. We're trying to make that happen, and I feel pretty confident it will. But it's going to be a who's who of Wichita athletes that came out of high schools here in Wichita, went on to do great things athletically at the college level, in many cases the pro level, Olympic level. One night event, August 15th, I think it's going to be a monumental occasion. There'll never be anything else like it, I don't think. I mean, maybe in 50 years somebody else will plan, some other organization will plan something like this. But it's a fundraiser for my charity, League 42, as well as the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame, and it takes a village. That's a charity of former Shocker Terry Atwater. So we're combining forces to try to make an event that people will have to see, not want to see, but have to see.
August 15th?
August 15th at Koch Arena.
At Koch Arena. I'd like to do a podcast on the maneuverings of you and Terry Atwater getting Barry Sanders here to Wichita. Can we do that? All the behind-the-scenes work that you guys are going to do on that?
It requires effort, but we feel like the payoff's going to be there. But getting Lynette and Jim Ryan is a big deal for us. Very and there are many, many other big names. You mentioned Antoine Carr, Adrian Griffin. They're all confirmed. Mike Pelfrey, Mike Bell, Karima Williams. The list goes on, and it's growing as we speak. So it's going to be a fun event.
I was cut from the Cape and Mount Carmel basketball team as a freshman. I did play a lot of street hockey over on Donegal. How many years would Wichita have to survive for there to be like a 1,000 for 1,000 that I might make that list? Is that possible at all?
Well, I told my son, who was an all-city baseball player, that it would probably require into the 15,000s for him to make it.
Well, I would be far behind Jeff, definitely. All right, this has been a great time, Mike and Bob. Thank you very much for your time and your effort on this list, on this all-decade stuff. If you're listening or reading, we appreciate it. Thank you.